This is Fresh Air. Did you lose track of Butch Thompson after he left a Prairie Home Companion? He left the show in 1986, after 12 years as the show's pianist. Well, since then, he's been traveling around America and the world, performing classic jazz. And he's made a series of recordings featuring the music of Jelly Roll Morton, Fats Waller, UB Blake, Bix Beiderbecke, and others. Before we talk, let's hear something from his latest CD, Minnesota Wonder. This is From Monday On. A lot of our listeners know you're playing from Prairie Home Companion. Do you think that your recordings show off a different aspect of your playing?
Yeah, a lot of the music on the Prairie Home Companion, of course, was a wide variety of styles and a wide variety, perhaps, and I'm talking only about myself here, but a wide variety of, competence or familiarity with whatever styles were being presented. I sometimes felt like I was playing things that I wasn't exactly completely the master of.
You know, I think, judging from your recordings, I'd have to say you're not a show-off. You don't go for speed or for the fancy stuff. You're in fact a very reflective player of early jazz.
Yeah, I think there's a side of me that has probably emerged more recently. When I first started learning this stuff, you know, I was still a teenager. And at that time, I was much more interested in the flashy side of it, fast playing and, you know, quick left hand and impressing people with virtuosity or something. And as the years have gone by, I've got more and more concerned with lyricism, I think, and reflectiveness, as you say, which is a good word, so that nowadays I'm more likely to sit down. If I'm going to sit down and just play for relaxation, I'll probably play something pretty rather than something fast.
Well, speaking of reflective, you do a piece by Fats Waller called Chelsea that I think is much more reflective than the Fats Waller tunes most of us are familiar with. Tell us something about this piece, how you found it, why you play it.
Well, it's part of a suite that Fats put together, which was meant to portray different parts of the city of London. And actually, I think it reflects a side of Fats that he may have wanted to get out to the public more than he was actually in a position to do quite often. He was in fact an extremely lyrical and reflective player. It's a beautiful piece, extremely beautiful melody, and I just thought it fit in nicely with the sort of tone I wanted to have on this recording.
Well, let's hear Chelsea by Fats Waller. This is Butch Thompson at the piano from his latest record, Minnesota Wonder.
Thank you.
Butch Thompson is my guest. We're listening to a Fats Waller piece from his latest album, Minnesota Wonder. Let me ask you a couple of Prairie Home Companion type questions. How did you first get onto the show? How did you first become the house band?
Garrison Keillor and I were classmates, more or less, at the University of Minnesota. And we were in several classes together. It's back in the early 60s, and that's where we met. Later on, he started the show, actually, I believe in 1974. He did some of the first radio broadcasts, which were similar to what the show would become. And I was asked to be a guest frequently after 1974 and took over sort of the house piano player job by a process of accretion or something, elimination, so that by the time it became a national program, I was the piano player and I had my trio there.
You know, during the show, one of your featured spots would be the intermission break when everybody was supposed to get up and stretch their legs and talk amongst themselves.
That's right.
And the local announcer would come on the local radio stations and promo what was happening that evening on the station. How did you feel about taking your kind of showcase piece at the time when other people were supposed to talk?
Well, quite often we decided to practice something since we didn't think that many people were listening. Turned out later that they were, but we sometimes thought, well, nobody's going to hear this exactly. They'll know that somebody's playing, but why don't we rehearse this or that? It's hard to believe, I suppose, but it's true. I wasn't that upset about it, really. I found that the listeners were sometimes a lot more disturbed about it than I was.
My guest is pianist Butch Thompson. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is pianist Butch Thompson. He has a series of solo piano recordings distributed by Rounder Records. So tell me something about your early days taking piano lessons. Did you have good teachers? Did you choose them yourself? Did you want to stay home all the time and practice?
My mother found a teacher for me. I'm from a small town called Marine on St. Croix. It's on the St. Croix River here in Minnesota. She found a teacher. She talked a friend of hers into taking me on. This person had never taught piano before.
Ooh, great.
but there wasn't anyone else in town who could even start to teach me at that time.
Huh. Was that because your town was so small or what?
Yes, it was a small town of 300 people.
Wow, that is small.
And
my apartment building had lots more people than that.
From there I went to an ex-concert pianist in a nearby town of Stillwater, a woman who actually taught me a lot just by her example. She'd sit down and play whatever it was we were working on in an extremely dramatic fashion. We played things like Clair de Lune and all the sort of standards of piano lesson literature. And she would play these dramatic versions. She had a lot of flair, and that really showed me something, probably more than the technique that she tried to put across. It was this style. You have to have style.
What was the biggest drama surrounding your the first part of your life or the first part of your musical life?
I found actually my sort of conversion experience almost when I was in junior high school. In fact, in the seventh grade, and played in the junior high school talent show in Stillwater, Minnesota. This was the worst case of stage fright I think I've ever had. I've never been anywhere near as upset as that again. But the audience was the best audience in many ways that you could imagine, because what I did was play a version of Bill Haley's Rock Around the Clock as my piece in front of the junior high school audience. And they were knocked out. This was top 40 stuff. And I had known that they were going to find it unusual, and I thought they might like it, but I had no idea that they were going to have this kind of explosive reaction. And in some ways, maybe that's why I'm a professional musician, because of that experience. Could be. It really confirmed me, at least, in my ambition, which, in fact, I don't remember a time when I didn't think that it would be a glamorous profession.
Well, how explosive was this reaction? Did they dance?
No, they just made a lot of noise when I finished the piece. I think part of it was probably that they were so surprised that I did something like that.
And yet you didn't become a rock and roll player.
No, I didn't. But the music of the 50s and the early rock and roll hits were actually not that different stylistically from some of the things I'd been interested in learning to play. Boogie Woogie, particularly, it was a kind of piano music which I was very interested in, and it was no trouble at all to adapt the music of Bill Haley and Elvis Presley and Little Richard and Fats Domino. Both Richard and Fats, of course, were piano players anyway, to this Boogie Woogie style.
Now, what's another big drama that changed your life, another big turning point for you?
Well, a major turning point was my first encounter with the New Orleans musicians at Preservation Hall. I really can't emphasize enough how impressed I was with them and how amazed I was to run across musicians who played the way they did. They were so relaxed and so... I think I learned more by watching them at first than I did by actually listening to what they were playing, because their attitude about music was something different from anything I'd ever imagined. They took a lot of pride in what they were playing, but they were so relaxed. They weren't jumping around. They weren't pointing the clarinet at the ceiling. They were just sitting there and playing their music. It was a revelation to me. It really was.
Now, how old were you about when you met them?
18.
Uh-huh.
So you, impressionable.
Right. And just out of the small town that you grew up in.
That's right.
Now, I imagine that the small town you grew up in was predominantly, if not completely, white.
That's right.
And so you hadn't been exposed to many or maybe even any black people, let alone really good people from the jazz life, you know, who'd lived a life, rather long life, playing jazz. So what was it like for you to actually start talking with them and playing with them? Were you nervous about introducing yourself? And did you feel, really different, like a real outsider?
Well, in fact, I think the whole thing was made even more of a culture shock by the fact that I was in New Orleans and that it was such a different place. It's almost like being in a foreign country, particularly if you haven't been much of anywhere else and you're from a small town in Minnesota. It's more like being in the tropics, and there are so many different cultures that kind of came together in New Orleans that it didn't occur to me really that the blackness of the musicians was any different from all the other cultural differences. I really never thought of it quite like that.
Did you worry at first that you would come off as hopelessly square?
I did have a feeling, and that is why you're nervous in a situation like that, because I didn't talk like they did. My accent, I'm extremely aware of my accent whenever I go anyplace, because I know that I have a Minnesota accent. But I knew I didn't exactly speak the same kind of English, and I felt very self-conscious about that, as you always do when you're a teenager.
As you were picking up new styles of playing, were you picking up new ways of speaking as well?
No, I never did that. Too self-conscious, perhaps. So all I picked up was the music. It's one of the things that is perhaps attractive to someone of my background about the music is that it is such a free expression of emotion and such a natural outpouring of things that are perhaps not put into words that often or acted out in a very direct way by people from the kind of background that I'm from, which is predominantly Scandinavian and from Minnesota. We don't do that. We don't have emotional outpourings, but we do it in music, perhaps. And certainly the music of the blacks in New Orleans was a highly expressive kind of thing that was attractive to me.
Well, gosh, I have to say, you really sound like the kind of inhibited, shy Scandinavian Minnesotan that Garrison has always talked about in his monologues. And here you were learning a very uninhibited form of music.
Right, I'm sure that's what attracted me to it.
Mm-hmm.
That confrontation with, as a means of personal expression. I'm sure that's what attracted me to it.
Butch Thompson, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Butch Thompson's series of classic jazz recordings is distributed by Rounder Records. This is Fresh Air.